All right, I invite you to take your Bible and turn with me today to Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. We've been looking at the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Very, very simple, and you've heard this so many times before, and it's committed to memory from the time you were probably a child. And here's what Jesus said in verse 12. So in everything do to others what we would have them do to you. But this sums up the law and the prophets. A man by the name of Robert Fulgham wrote a very profound book several years ago. It's very simple as well. It's entitled, All I Ever Needed to Know, I Learned in Kindergarten. I tried to tell my parents that I need not need to go on to school after kindergarten. In fact, I think I skipped kindergarten. But one thing that he taught in there is that we ought to share everything. Another thing he said that we ought to play fair. We ought to wash our hands before we eat. He also taught that cookies and milk are always appropriate. Take a nap every afternoon. When you go out on the sidewalk, be sure you look both ways before you cross the street. He also said flush. He also said, he said that when you go out, you need to hold hands and stick together and many other things. When we turn to Matthew chapter 7, verse 12. Jesus just gives us 14 words in the English language that makes life so very, very simple. One writer calls this the Mount Everest of all ethical values. All the false religions have their version of the Golden Rule. We're not sure exactly where the phrase or the term or the title Golden Rule is derived, but that's how we know it. The first thing I want you to notice there is a summary of the commandment. Now notice Jesus did not say, this is how we're to demand others treat us. He said here that this is how we ought to treat other people. First of all, we ought to treat them honestly. I'm going to give you several cross-references today. One is Romans chapter 12, verse 17. Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everybody. Wouldn't you love to live in a world where everybody told the truth? I turned on television about 4 months ago, and the Atlanta News had a story. There were some people who were posing as being from the financial office of an Atlanta hospital. They were calling patients' rooms in that particular hospital and telling the patients that they were from the financial office and they needed the patients' credit card numbers so they could make sure that their bill was satisfied. This was all fraud, and as soon as those credit card numbers were fraudulently obtained, these crooks went out to Walmart and everywhere else and charged on other people's credit cards. How many times do you turn on television and see the Fox 5 investigative reporter? They're reporting a pastor who is ripping off money from his church. They're going out and they're finding people who built swimming pools in a very shoddy manner and never made good on their contracts. They go out and chase down builders, lawyers, contractors, politicians. And I want you to know, many of those who are caught show absolutely no remorse. In the Japanese culture, honesty is a very high virtue. In fact, back in Tokyo, back in 2002, now keep this in mind, they don't live in Japan by finders, keepers. If you find something, you turn it in. In 2002, in Tokyo, Japan, the police department said the equivalent of $23 million was turned in to their police station. And by the end of the year, they had been able to get $17 million of that money back to the rightful owners who had lost it. It probably says something that meticulous about honesty. We think that's crazy in our culture. But if you're going to do unto others like you want them to do unto you, you're going to treat people with honesty. The next thing I want you to write down quickly is love. In 1 John 3:11, John wrote, this is the message you heard from the beginning. We should love one another. You know, everybody wants to be needed. Whether you admit it or not, everybody wants to be loved. So if we're going to have people loving us, we've got to love other people. I was involved in an estate planning conference last week. It's amazing to me how many people will not write out a will or sign a living will or plan their funeral in advance. You say, well, that's so morbid. No, it's not. It's showing love for your family. But I read last week a man who had written a will, and he addressed his two daughters. And here's what he said, quote, unto my two daughters, Frances Marie and Denise Victoria, by reason of their bad attitude toward their father, I leave them a sum total of $1 each and a father's curse. May their lives be cluttered with misery, unhappiness, and sorrow. And may their deaths be soon and of a lingering, malignant, and torturous nature. May their souls rest in hell and suffer the torments of the condemned for eternity. I don't think there's a person here who would like to be addressed in that manner. Well, that's what this man really did. That's the way he felt about his children. I think we'd rather people love us. Therefore, what do we got to do? We got to love other people. Be honest. Love, show compassion to people. Romans 12:15. Rejoice with those who rejoice and mourn with those who mourn. We need people to come alongside, celebrate the good times, and be able to weep with us in the days of tragedy. Several years ago, a man named Dr. Bernard Rimlin, director of the Institute for Child Behavior Research, conducted a survey, and he asked some people to name 10 people, 10 of their friends, and tell me where they're happy or unhappy. And he said, now let me give you a definition of selfishness before you evaluate your 10 friends. Here's the definition of selfishness. He said, a devotion of one's time and resources to one's own welfare, an unwillingness to inconvenience oneself for others. He found that of all the people labeled happy by these folks, they were also unselfish. And here's what he wrote as he summed his research. Those whose activities are devoted to bring themselves happiness are far less likely to be happy than those whose efforts are devoted to making others happy. The key to his research was this: do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Another thing is respect. In 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 3, Paul begins by saying, grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. In verse 4, he says, I always thank God for you because His grace given you in Christ Jesus. I don't know about you, but I don't really like being around the person that nobody wants to be around. The other thing is this: you and I do not want to be the person that nobody wants to be around. Ladies, has your phone ever rung? Your child answers the phone. She runs down the house, Mom, it's for you. And they tell you who it is. And Mom, you look back at your child and say, tell them I'm not home. And your child says, Mom said to tell you, I'm not home. You ever do that? That's showing a tremendous lack of respect for people. Aren't you thankful for caller ID? Aren't we all? But we don't want to be the person that nobody wants to talk to. One of our police officers was working on Wednesday night with our teenagers. And you know, on Wednesday night, we can have 100, 150, 200, 250 teenagers. Many of these, the only time they get to come to church is on Wednesday night. They come from unchurched, unsaved homes, many broken homes. One of our police officers said one night that one of the teenage boys walked up to him and said, I don't respect you. And he started criticizing the officer. Officer hadn't done anything. He's just there to make sure everybody's safe. And he went on and on, chewing out the officer. And our police officer looked at the boy and said, son, I'm about to give you two choices. I'm going to give you a ride downtown or a ride home. The boy shot out the door and walked himself home. I think our police officers and our firefighters, our EMTs and our military deserve our utmost respect. And we need that in the White House all the way down to our courthouse. I don't know about you, but I respect our police officers. Do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Now notice it's the style of our behavior. Verse 12 says, so in everything do to others. In other words, we've got to take some action. It's an important part of the golden rule. Jesus was saying that if you want people to treat you lovingly and with respect and honestly and compassionately, you've got to treat people in like manner. Proverbs 18:24, treat other people generously. Whoever has friends must show themselves friendly. Sometimes I meet people and they say, well, I don't have any friends. Oh, really? Well, let me ask you a question. Why is that? A person who has friends must show themselves to be friendly. You know, sometimes people tell me, say, well, you know, I came to your church and sat down and nobody spoke to me. The thing people don't understand, we've had people who've been attending here for 10, 15, 20 years. They've never joined. That's okay. They're more faithful than half of the members on the roll of this church. But the thing first-time guests don't understand lots of times is you're sitting next to a guest. How about that? You know, one thing I do when Delaney and I visit another church, I try to find out who's sitting in front of me, who's sitting behind me. Find out a lot of interesting stuff. We were at Burnt Hickory Baptist over in Marietta just back in the springtime. And there was a couple in front of us. Another couple came with them. And I shook their hand and said, how long have y'all been going to this church? Oh, this is our third Sunday. We just love it. Listen, nobody spoke to you at church. Let me ask you a question. Who did you speak to when you were in church? You say, well, I'm introverted. Oh, really? What about on the couch yesterday afternoon, your lazy boy cheering for your favorite football team? Or throwing pillows at the screen because your team stinks so bad. I understand that perfectly. You didn't have any problem being extroverted then, expressing yourself. Treat other people generously. How we treat others can be just for the purpose of getting people to treat us that want them to treat us. That is an improper objective. Charles Kingsley wrote, if you wish to be miserable, think much about yourself. Somebody else wrote this. The six most important words in the English language are, I admit I made a mistake. Men, if you're married, you need to memorize that. I admit I made a mistake. You say, well, I didn't. Admit you made a mistake. It works, I promise you. The five most important words are, you did a good job. When's the last time you encouraged and complimented somebody? He said that the four most important words are, what do you think? The three most important words are, after you, please. The most important words are, thank you. The one most important word is, we. And the least important word is, I. Jesus tells us to treat others the way we want them to treat us. Treat other people graciously. In Matthew chapter 18, 21 and 22, says we have to forgive people. You say, well, the problem is, in my situation, it's not my fault. Well, do you realize that the reconciliation process, according to the New Testament, begins with the offended party, the one who has been hurt? Jesus did not say, treat others the way they treat us. He said, treat others the way you want to be treated. I read about a famous pianist who was going to be in concert in New York City. Now I want you to know all the muckety-mucks, all the wealthy, and you know all the society, cultural class was there for this wonderful concert. People were crowding in, they were getting up in the box seats. Everybody was dressed formal. Now some people don't know what that is. But I'll just let you figure that out. It's not jeans with a tear in the knee that need an iron-on knee patch. That's not what this is. But I want you to know, one lady brought her little boy, who's about 6 years old, who had been taking piano lessons. Now, I don't know about you, But if I was 6 years old and somebody brought me to a formal concert by a concert pianist, I'd rather be branded by my daddy's belt several times than have to sit through that. Well, the little boy came, and his mom was talking to all the upper crust around her and the society people, and she didn't notice that he slipped out of his seat and rushed downstairs and went to the stage before the pianist came on. Everybody was talking to each other. He sat down at this big concert piano, and nobody noticed, and he began to play chopsticks. It got everybody's attention. People were complaining, "We didn't pay our money to come hear this garbage. Does that child have parents? Why did they let him get away?" And the lady, when she turned around, she was appalled. Concert pianist heard all the turmoil. He came out on the stage. He ignored the crowd. He walked up behind the little boy who continued to play chopsticks on the bench. He reached down and he whispered something to him. He told him, "Keep playing what you're playing." And the concert pianist put his arms around the little boy, put his hands on the keys, and embellished a new composition based around chopsticks. Do unto others as you want them to what? Do unto you. Don't you want a world filled with love and encouragement? And then the thoughtfulness that's required, for this sums up the law and the prophets. Notice this says it's required by the law. Jesus says, "For this is the law." In simple words, this is commanded. This is not supplemental. This is not optional. But he says, for a Christian, this is fundamental behavior. Do unto others as you have other people do unto you. Let me ask you, how much would that reduce our robberies in our nation? How much would that reduce murders? How much would that reduce divorce? How much would that reduce bullying in our nation? I still contend, though, all you need to do with bullies to eliminate it is get two or three people, go beat the tar out of them. 1 Corinthians 13. That's the way we did it when I was growing up, and it works now. Let them sue you. Go ahead. How would it reduce crime and hatred and bad relations between people, even nations, if we live by the golden rule? Now look closely here. This verse, it begins, notice he says, "So," the King James Version says, "therefore." In other words, Jesus links the golden rule back to everything he said in the entire Sermon on the Mount. And then he says, "in everything." So the standard is not most of the time. Some of the time, when it's convenient, or anything short of all the time, that's no small matter. And earlier in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus told his followers, "You must love your enemies, not just your friends." Observe also that operative word here. He didn't say, "think the golden rule." He didn't say, "memorize the golden rule." He said, "do the golden rule." Then it's revealed by the prophets. The prophets had preached that we ought to treat others unselfishly and unconditionally. They had been preachers of God's commands and reminded the people of the commands of the law. Somebody wrote what they call the Ten Commandments for human relationships, and I like it. Number one, I want you to get these down. If you don't hear anything else I say, number one, speak to people. Since I started driving a pickup truck, more people wave at me than ever before. I don't know who they are. I just wave. Now, some of the guys that drive these big 2,500 pickups, they don't act like they know me. You understand? You know, those that the speedometer goes this way and the gas gauge goes that way when they're going from red light to red light. But you know what? It doesn't hurt to speak to people. And some people don't, they won't speak back to you. So what? Just be nice to them. You don't have to know them. Just speak to them. Number two, smile at people. Smile at people. It takes 72 facial muscles to frown and 14 facial muscles to smile. Did you know that? Some of you are lazy anyway. So just go ahead and smile and use 14 muscles. Here's another thing. Call people by name. Now, I'm horrible with names. Absolutely horrible. I called a young lady who's visiting here today that I met Wednesday night. I called her Jackie, and her name's Jennifer. But you know what? I got credit for trying. Another thing I'm bad about when I'm calling people's names, I match people up with the wrong spouse sometime. That's nothing intentional now. You're supposed to keep that straight. Just keep reminding me of your name. You can't remember names. Do like I do. I have memory devices with lots of your names. I will never, ever tell you what those memory devices are. Call people by name. Be friendly. And be helpful. There's always somebody to help at Walmart. Isn't that a culture shock when you walk in Walmart sometime? Now here's what happens. I'll go in there during the week and I may have on a shirt and tie. And you know, somebody will come up to me and say, "Sir, could you tell me where the trash bags are?" And you know, I'll take them to the trash bags. And then somebody else will see me because I'm helping them, and then they think I work at Walmart. So I want to squash the rumors right now. But you know what? It does not hurt to be helpful. Because one of these days I'll be one of those people in one of those electric scooters in Walmart. And I can just warn you about that. Give them a lot of room. Okay? And when they back up, they never look. They just hit reverse. And get ready, because here they come. But I'm going to be one of those people one day. And I want you to help me find the trash bags and some other things that I will need in assisted living. The next thing I want you to write down is this. We ought to be cordial. We ought to speak and act as everything you do is genuinely a pleasure. You know, Chick-fil-A's got it right. My pleasure. Guys, when your wife asks you to do something, and it's one of the most detestable things in the whole world, it'll help your attitude if you say what? I'm trying to help you guys. My pleasure. The other thing, be genuinely interested in people. You can almost like everybody if you try. You ever have somebody that's just absolutely drilling you? And you've got to go. And you keep trying to make eye contact with them. I was talking to a lady the other day. She said she got caught in a situation like that and felt her high heels sink through the floor. And said the other lady just kept talking. She said, I kept looking at her, and she said, when I raised my foot, she said the heat and air vent came out of the floor on her high heel. Some people will literally bore you all the way in the floor, but you got to be genuinely interested. Be generous with praise and cautious with criticism. Doesn't hurt to encourage somebody, but in Rome, Georgia, if you criticize them, you're probably talking to somebody's cousin, because everybody's related to each other with the branch kin in this town. Be considerate with the feelings of other people. There are usually three sides to a controversy: yours, the other fellow's, and the right one. The other thing you want to do is be alert to serve people. What counts most in life is what we do for other people. And the last thing I want to tell you is this. Add to this a good sense of humor. I'm writing a little book right now. Nobody's going to read it. But I'm writing this so that when I go to assisted living, I'll have something to read and laugh about. I'm writing little one-pagers about things that really happened to me in ministry. And I know you wouldn't want to hear any of that. I have read it to our secretaries, and you know, they're just not so sure about a lot of this stuff. You know, I might be like some of these people who, when they were babies, they hummed a tune and their parents told them they could sing, and they really can't sing, and they believe that lie the rest of their life. And then they just had to go make a CD, and now they got a garage full of CDs. I'm not going to write a book so I can have a garage full of books. But you know what I've learned? That if you'll live and laugh at yourself and laugh at what happens in life, people will lighten up in the way they see you. Many years ago, there was two students, college students at Stanford University. They heard about a famous pianist, concert pianist named Hahn from Poland. And they decide if they just get him to come to the United States. Now, these guys are just two students trying to make some money. You know how that goes. They would get a concert hall, invite him to come. Now, this guy, when he came big. When he would come to the United States, come by ship, then he'd go across our country by train. He would carry two or three spare pianos on the train with him. You didn't have a piano in place for him. He brought his own from Poland. These old boys from Stanford, they got in touch with Hans' agent and said, "Listen, we'll take care of the arena. We'll take care of the expenses." Now, these guys don't have any money. And they will guarantee the concert pianist $2,000. Now, this was in the early 1900s, so that was a lot of money. Guess what happened? Concert date came. Big crowd there. They sold their tickets. They miscalculated the cost, and after the concert was over, and these two Stanford College students paid their bills, you know how much money they had left to pay the concert pianist? $1,600. So they saw the concert pianist after everything was over. They handed him $1,600, and then they had a promissory note for $400. They said, "We will make sure you get the other $400 to make $2,000. Concert pianist tore up the note. He threw it on the floor. He said, "Here's the $1,600. This note is not any good. You don't owe me anything except this. I know you got some more expenses. Go pay the expenses with the $1,600 you gave me. Give each of yourselves 10% of the balance and send me the rest, or you don't owe me anything else." World War I came. End of World War I, Poland was starving. Guess who the prime minister was of Poland by then? Hahn, the current concert pianist. He sent a letter to the United States. Said, "Our people are starving in Poland. Could you please send us some food?" And as the United States usually does, they sent food to feed the nation. This prime minister, concert pianist, had arranged to meet the president of the United States to thank him formally for what he had done in Paris. He arrived in Paris. Our president, Herbert Hoover, was there. And the prime minister said, "I've just come to thank you for giving us food relief in our country. You've saved us." Herbert Hoover said, "That's all right, Hon. I knew the need was great. Besides, Hon, you helped me once when I was a college student at Stanford University." Ladies and gentlemen, that's a golden rule moment. Do unto others as you want them to do unto you. You say, "Well, they're going to cheat me." Listen, that's God's business. And I'm going to tell you what, He can take care of that a whole lot better than you and me. Let's stand right where we are. Heads are bowed, eyes are closed.